If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, dini, wal-azam, ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws about purity according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
SubhanAllah.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. We are still talking about the rules of purification according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid here sitting with me. Sheikh Javid, what's the jurisprudential law or duty of an individual who's wounded in some of those areas which are involved in wiping the wudu?
Well, if he cannot wipe the wound with a wet hand, then he is obliged to do tayammum instead, you know. But in the event that he can put a piece of cloth on the wound and do wiping over it with a wet hand, then the precaution is to do it. That he should put a piece of cloth on it. And then in addition to doing it, because it's kind of jabira, because if you put a piece of cloth or a splint on the wounded part and then you wipe on it, it is called jabira. Now, in addition to that, it is the precaution is to perform tayammum also, and this is a kind of tayammum. In addition, you know, tayammum is there.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean, okay, jabira means that when you do jabira, it means that you should do wudu also, because you should wash all other parts of your face and hands, and then that part of wound which is, for example, from which blood is maybe oozing out or coming out, it should be dressed, it should be covered with something, and then jabira should be done. And then in addition to jabira, of course, tayammum should be performed. So wudu is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Jabira without wudu is not applicable.
I see. Does jabira apply to both, wudu and tayammum? Like, for example, when it comes to wiping the head.
When you are, you know, tayammum, in this scenario which we are discussing, actually, tayammum is done as a measure of precaution.
Mm-hmm.
And what is done is wudu. Wudu is basically necessary, okay?
Okay.
And jabira is on top of it. You know, you cannot, because you cannot touch, let water reach the...
There's a wound, for example, on your head.
Yes.
I'm talking about that part.
Yes.
Like, when you can't do the wiping because water is harmful to your head because of the wound.
Yeah. Wiping, okay, if a small portion of your head is wounded, then you can wipe on the other part of the head. It doesn't mean you all the front parts of your head are actually covered or wounded, and in that mm-hmm. case, of course, you will not be able to wipe.
I see.
Yes. So jabira is applicable when you, for example, you have wounds on your hands or your face or maybe arms. And in that case, you need to perform wudu and then do jabira. Jabira is actually a splint,
mm-hmm.
which you put on the wound, and then you wipe over it.
Yes.
Just as a complement, to make up for the water which does not reach that part, and then as a measure of precaution, you are going to do tayammum.
I see. Okay, Sheikh Javid, if a person doesn't know that his wudu is invalid, and he realizes this, he comes to know this, only after completing the whole wudu, what's the rule? How has how should he actually go about this issue?
Yeah, an invalid wudu is an invalid wudu. You know, it is invalid basically. You cannot pray with it, because it's not. You have not achieved tahara or purification. So it is obligatory for such an individual to repeat the wudu, to go over again and perform wudu once again, you know, because he cannot pray, he cannot perform prayers without making wudu. And the wudu which he is going to make should be, of course, valid. An invalid wudu cannot and is not sufficient for prayers.
Mm-hmm.
So wudu in this case, of course, is necessary. And of course, if he has offered prayer with that white wudu, he should repeat the prayers. He should repeat the prayers as well after making wudu again.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
Ooh.
followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/Ian. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of purification based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Tawid, one has a wound on one of the limbs involved in the wudu process, right?
Yes.
That very part or limb, bleeds continuously despite putting a dressing on it. So what's the rule about this? How can they perform wudu or even tayammum?
Well, it is obligatory for him to use a dressing on the wound, such as one made of nylon, okay, which prevents blood from oozing out. So that dressing should be used to prevent the water from prevent the blood from oozing out. And in that case, he can continue making wudu, and because he should prevent the blood from spreading to other parts.
Mm-hmm.
And as he makes wudu, if the blood is spread to other parts, of course, he cannot continue making wudu, or even praying will be difficult. So he should stop, prevent water, the blood from coming out and from spreading to other parts. You know, as far as the blood of wound is concerned, as long as it remains on the wound and it does not spread to other parts, it is exempted. It is waived. You know,
mm-hmm.
So the blood of wound and the blood of the pus, does not affect your wudu. But if it is oozing out and is spreading, you should put a dressing on it.
Prevent it from bleeding first, and then
spreading to other parts.
I see. Okay. Sheikh Tawid, is it reprehensible to wipe off the moisture from the wudu or after the wudu? And is it also recommended to abstain from doing so, from getting off or wiping off the moisture from any other limbs that are involved in the wudu?
Well, His Eminence says that if a particular towel or piece of cloth is specified for such an act, there is no objection to it. It doesn't mean that it is makruh or reprehensible or disliked or something, you know. So it's okay. There is no problem.
Mm-hmm. I see. Sheikh Tawid, how about the artificial dye that some women use to dye their hair, for example, or their eyebrows? Do they act as a kind of impediment to the validity of the wudu, or even worse?
You know, it depends on whether the dye has substances or forms any kind of impediment or barrier. And if it is just dye, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. does not have a substance that might prevent water from reaching the hair, then, of course, wudu and ghusl would be both valid. There would be no problem and using it. But if it forms a substance, of course, that should be removed, because it will definitely affect, especially when it is on the eyebrows. The eyebrows should be washed while making wudu, while performing ghusl. So if there's anything, any barrier, it should be removed before wudu or ghusl.
Mm-hmm. How about the ink? Because it might happen to people, especially those people who write with the ballpoint pens, sometimes the ink, gets out or oozes out of the pens. So they they touch their, for example, their arms, their hands, right? And they stay there like as a stain, all right? So if this ink stays there, does it act as an obstacle of the water to reach the various skin where they stand?
The answer is very much like the answer I gave to the previous question. You know, if the ink, and this is a question which most people would like to know the answer to.
Yes.
If it has a substance, the ink has a substance that prevents water from reaching the skin, then the wudu is invalid.
Because does it depend on its size?
It doesn't depend, because even a small, tiny portion, a part as small as the tip of a needle, if you know that, mm-hmm. like let's say as small as a dot,
right,
is there, and it forms a substance that prevent water from reaching the skin, mm-hmm. then it should be removed. Otherwise, wudu will be invalid. And actually, the decision concerning these instances, you know, rests with the duty bound himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very difficult for the mujtahid to say whether it forms a barrier or not, because he just gives a general answer to questions. Now, when it comes to whether a substance or the ink forms a barrier or not, it has to be decided, it has to be, you know, determined or, you know, distinguished by the duty bound himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. I will bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي المميت الظاهر والباطن.